Ah, you know what the sense is.
Yes, I know the sense. It starts for me with this picture, because that makes an introduction. It says it's René Green.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is called Making History.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see kind of a situation
mm-hmm.
with these two black mouse-like things. It's like soil mm-hmm. on something, but mm-hmm. we don't know, is it heating up the soil?
I never thought of those looking like mice. It looked to me more like some kind of excavation. I think that something had been dug out and put on these bits of metal.
These heaps are maybe the size of a child if it were lying on the ground, but it looks as if it would, somebody had been digging and just placed them there. But they seem to be placed on some kind of metal grid underneath. And this, and then they're connected to the wall with a cable as if they were plugged in, as if there was some kind of electrical connections.
I guess this is a exhibition space with an installation concerning dirt, soil on the mirror. Two parts in symmetry, little hills of dirt and stones. I can't figure out why it's connected to some electricity, maybe. But I can see these are mirrors on the ground.
I didn't really think about dead bodies. Things being buried underneath something and having to dig out, find what was underneath, what was originally.
Making history with two piles of dirt on it is also a rather depressing sight, I think. Again, you could probably go on for hours about what that means, especially because it seems to be two different types of dirt. But I'm not quite sure right now what to say exactly about it. And a shelf with only one book in it is also a very depressing sight, really. It seems very depressing, the whole thing. Midnight Rambler, Factory Girl, Parachute Woman, Street Fighting Man is not a very... doesn't paint a very, very happy picture.
I got such a poignant and sad feeling looking at this particular photograph, which shows what would seem to be part of a whole room and then a passage into another room. And there's, in this passage, is a shelf, and you only see it from the back. And it's so sad. It's this forlorn little back of something that is, in its way, a tombstone, but it doesn't have the weight of a tombstone. It is still a sad little bookshelf with its back, and that's, of course, a forgotten memory. Or it itself is there. It's lost and forgotten. And its present, of course, turns these clumps of dirt, in a sense, into graves. And I really think this is about, memory and consciousness. And of course, I have to think of Robert Smithson, whom I just love so much, and who, of course, died at such a young age. And I fell passionately in love with him posthumously when I saw a Smithson exhibit here in Vienna many years ago. And I just, oh my God. And so this is very evocative of that time, which happened to coincide with my youth.
Is that a big book or something?
Yeah, we think it's a book, right?
So I can see a white bookshelf. It looks like a bookshelf with various compartments, with various sizes. Some are larger and some are smaller. It looks like a self-made one or designed especially for some special reason. It's empty and there's only one object lying in this bookshelf, and I can't really see what it is or which book it is. It looks more like a thick atlas or something like that.
Again, the dirt, mountains on the mirrors, and a shelf, a cupboard on the wall, white and almost empty, like a Mondrian painting, maybe. The close-up shows, it's an IKEA, maybe. And there's a catalog with a bunch of papers. The others are empty, like a huge sketch pad.
So on the wall, I can see two drawings. These drawings are black and white, and they show a different shelf. It looks like one that you have in an office with three drawers. And strangely, there is some kind of material that seems to be growing out of the shelf, and it's coming out of the inside from the shelf. And it looks like it's something that's growing in an uncontrollable way.
It's funny, the shelves themselves are so very, very post-1990. They could not be from an earlier time. There are, you know, these tiny drawers, and the way the slats in the back are not slats at all, but these sort of crosses. This is part of the aesthetic of design that I associate very much with, you know, sort of high-end design that was then popularized by places like IKEA. So that whole, you know, from Sotsas to IKEA kind of thing that we see and all live with or move in and out of. So that is striking for me.
The pictures on the wall all look like musicians from what I assume are the 90s, except this one down here that says it's from 1969. But besides the fact that one of them seems to be Kurt Cobain, I have no idea who they are exactly.
Two men that we kind of know, we should know those people.
It looks like absolutely that, like there's some sort of band, which some of the other images are too, and with the lyrics in the middle. They're all words from that you would recognise from that kind of time period, from like big, like songs or like things that were popular.
Obviously there are people who are singing, well, musicians. It must have something to do with Altamont, 1969, and what happened there. So on one of the pictures you have the portrait of a man with dark hair and who's wearing glasses. Can't really tell who it is. He has a thoughtful look in his face. And then, but there's also a drawing where you can see two men singing into a microphone, and I would say it's Mick Jagger and Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones. And I just recently heard something about Altamont in a documentary on the radio, and it was quite interesting because it was like a series where they took up the history and things that I had not really been aware of or that I'd forgotten about this catastrophe or the disaster that Altamont ended up in.
Out of the blue into the black, it's quite good with the picture. It makes completely sense, but you cannot know which sense. And it's something has happened. But what?
Out of the blue and into the black.
Out of the blue and into the black, that reminds me of a song by Neil Young. And another singer in front of in the back of the microphone reminds me of Kurt Cobain, who was not maybe even born at that time.
One thing that led to this disaster in Altamont was that they weren't prepared at all for what was going to happen there. And so they ended up engaging the guys from the Hell's Angels for security, which was not really the best of all ideas. And not only did they engage the Hell's Angels, they also, instead of paying them money for this service, they paid them in alcohol, like in beer and stuff. And that was part of the problem, that the guys from the Hell's Angels had been drinking all day long. They were already completely drunk, and then they started to be really aggressive, especially when people came too close to their motorbikes. And so it just got completely out of control.
And then on the top left is another drawing of a guy singing into a microphone. And again, I think we should know who that is.
You think he's singing?
Yeah.
I think he's making a speech.
Uh-huh.
There's more on to the picture. It says, yeah, that's clear for us too.
It looks pretty serious.
Yeah.
The first thing that strikes me when I look at these pictures, all of them together, the drawings and then the photographs and then the staging of the whole, these piles and clumps of dirt that looks like graves and these empty or half-empty shelves. Of course, I'm thinking of memory and memories. And when I look at these drawings, this brings back memories for me, my own memories of the music festivals that I so passionately attended in the 1960s and the 70s. And the absolute passion, it was so personal for all of us. Music was so central to our identities, our political lives, our social lives. It was just essential. It had such a deep meaning, a place. It had a central place. And when I think of myself, at 14 at High Mowing, which was a Waldorf school, and how my roommate Biffy would illegally leave the school just to go to or write notes, fake notes from her mother, so that she could go to Grateful Dead concerts, and the power that these festivals or these, you know, sort of things had, and these musicians. Maybe it's a function of age, but I think it was a function also of the time.
It's about uncovering things and digging things out and making sense of things.
But I think it's about erasing things in a way.
Uh-huh. In which way?
I see a panel, a block or a table with the words making history. And beyond that, there are two mounds of earth. Piled up, something attached to them. From the pictures on the side, the shelves with the earth, it's hard to say if the earth is coming out of the shelves or if the shelves are being buried. So one way of making history would be to uncover the shelves, dig them out, find what's buried inside them. But the other way of making history might be to bury the shelves, cover them up, so that whatever's inside them stays hidden inside there. And the pictures at the end of the room, pictures of musicians, so old pictures of musicians where they look so serious. It's the kind of musicians I remember from my youth, very seriously determined to point out what's wrong with the world and how to make it better and the right way to live. There's something being buried there too. And there's something attached to the mounds of earth. They look so neat, so orderly. But even here, it's hard to say if they're covering something up or if this is what's left over from what's been uncovered. And they're attached by long cords to the wall. But I don't know what the cords are for. what they could be attached to.
I'd like to say something else about why music and the events at the time have and had such a deep emotional resonance in and for my family. My parents were very, very engaged in the anti-war movement and in the civil rights movement. And so we took everything very, very personally and felt these things very deeply. And, you know, my parents were by no means young back then, but they really were so open to these young musicians as well and their music. I mean, my parents grew up dancing the jitterbug, but because they were so deeply entrenched and felt so deeply about the incredible things that were happening in our time, they were just wide open for anybody who was expressing themselves in a moving way. There was an amazing sense of solidarity, and my parents found different ways to express themselves and to do things. And I went, even as a small child, to all these sort of protest marches in our funny, very conservative Republican town of Nashua, New Hampshire. It's amazing that New Hampshire is now a Democratic state. I wouldn't have believed it possible.